Culture, August 14th. Yep. Big, big welcome to Capital Irish today. We're broadcasting, as we do every Sunday, from Capital Irish Access 106.1 FM here from Wellington, of course. And I hope you're all keeping nice and warm in this cold, cold winter. And first of all, I'm Alice Paul, and I'd like to thank our sponsors. That's the very first thing, because without them, we would have no show at all. So we thank Susie and Peter McGuinness, the Wellington Irish Trust, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. Now, at the Hutt Valley Irish Society, I want to remind you, you can go down there on the last Sunday of every month, 5:30 in the evening, and join all the other lovely families, young and old, children and grown-ups, and have a lovely time. So that's the last Sunday of every month. All newcomers are most welcome. And this is a pre-recorded show, because by the time this goes to air, I'm going to be in Sweden at my son's wedding. So I hope that I'll be nice and warm over there. But today I have a very special guest in the studio, Loretta Egan. Very welcome again, Loretta.
Thank you, Alice.
Lovely. Loretta, you were on the show with us a couple of years ago, or it must be nearly a couple of years ago. She did an amazing show with me, and we had listeners from all over the world, Tanzania and Canada and Switzerland and Germany, didn't we?
We did, indeed.
And she's a wonderful storyteller and raconteur, and a marvellous insight into some of the Irish poets, but in particular Yeats. And when Peter Ryan was our ambassador, herself and Peter Ryan travelled the country far and wide, bringing Yeats alive to people all over New Zealand, as well as Joyce, actually. And so today, I know that it's a real privilege to have you here to tell us a bit more about Yeats and to do a few, recite a few of his poems and give us a bit of insight into what they're actually about.
Okay,
so,
Alice.
Over to you, Loretta.
Thanks a lot. I'd like to start with the Lake Isle of Innisfree, because I suppose it is the most anthologised of all Yeats poems. And young kids in Ireland, we all had it didn't we?
Yeah,
we all had it in fourth class, and we all learned it off by heart. And Yeats himself didn't particularly like it, because it became so popular and synonymous with him, if you like.
It'd be like a song, you know, that
you're asked
to sing over
and over again,
and you start to hate it.
The story goes, and he has recorded this in his own writing, that he was walking down Fleet Street in London, and he was particularly homesick for the west of Ireland. And the Lake Isle of Innisfree is, in fact, a geographical location on Loch Gill in County Sligo. And his people were the Pollexfens in Sligo, and they were very well-off merchant classes, and he used to go there every summer. So he's walking down Fleet Street, and he passes a shop window, hears a tinkle of water, and suddenly he gets homesick. He sees a little fountain, and the bubbles in the fountain reminded him of the lake water lapping. So he's also very influenced by the American poet and transcendentalist Thoreau, who just went off and became to Walden and was at one with nature. So Yeats said, I'm just going there now. I'm going to go to Innisfree and move away from the concrete jungle, and I will just build a little cabin. I will be totally self-sufficient, and I will have all the peace in the world there from nature. I will arise and go now, and go to Innisfree, and a small cabin build there of clay and wattles made. 9 bean rows will I have there, a hive for the honeybee, and live alone in the bee-loud glade. And I shall have some peace there, for peace comes dropping slow, dropping from the vales of the morning to where the cricket sings. There midnight's all a glimmer, and noon a purple glow, and evening full of the linnet's wings. I will arise and go now, for always night and day I hear lake water lapping with slow sounds by the shore while I stand on the roadway or on the pavement grey. I hear it in the deep heart's core. And the second one I'd like to recite is "To an Isle in the Water." Again, the isle, this idea of, you know, a Shangri-La going off to a desert island, if you like. And Yeats obviously is the speaker in this poem. And he's, we can imagine him seated in a grand living room, and he sees this young maiden coming in and just going about her daily chores, domestic duties. But he's in love with her. He's very much in love with her because just because of one quality she has, her shyness. And he says, I would go away with her to a desert island.
Wow.
He's, Yeats, after all, is one of the last great romantic poets of the late Victorian era.
And what's the title of this one, Lorraine?
It's called "To an Isle in the Water."
Okay.
Shy one, shy one, shy one of my heart. She moves in the firelight pensively apart. She carries in the dishes and lays them in a row. To an isle in the water with her would I go. She carries in the candles and lights the curtained room. Shy in the doorway and shy in the gloom. And shy as a rabbit, helpful and shy. To an isle in the water with her would I fly. And Yeats was besotted with Maud Gonne, as we probably know, and she was very beautiful, and she never she refused to marry him. He proposed to her.
And now interject there for a minute, tell him who Maud Gonne was.
Maud Gonne was the
very important woman in Ireland.
Maud Gonne was the love of his life, and yeah. He saw her first of all when she came into the Yeats home in London, and right. He likened her to Helen of Troy,
oh, yeah.
The face that launched a thousand ships. She was so beautiful, but he was. He proposed to her several times. But if she had married him, English literature would be bereft of a
right.
wonderful body of poetry.
Wow.
And this one, he was very interested in the occult also. And he used to have seances with Maud Gonne, and indeed with the woman
really?
He did marry, Georgie Hides Lee. And he tosses, it's called Brown Penny, and he tosses a coin like we would, you know, toss a coin, who's going to do the wash up, heads or tails, when we were kids. And he tosses a coin, and the coin speaks to him.
Right.
So it's like the brown penny is like the medium. And he said, I whispered, I am too young. And then I am old enough. Wherefore I threw a penny to find out if I might love. Go and love, go and love, young men, if the lady be young and fair. Ah, penny, brown penny, brown penny, I am looped in the loops of her hair. Oh, love is the crooked thing. There is nobody wise enough to find out all that is in it, for he would be thinking of love till the stars had run away and the shadows had eaten the moon. Ah, penny, brown penny, brown penny, one cannot begin it too soon.
Wow.
And Maud Gonne, of course, didn't marry him, and he was very bitter about it. And he wrote this poem, "When You're Old," and it has a bitter tone, like that beauty will fade away and one day you will be old and take down my book of poetry and see and read it and see that one person really loved you genuinely for all those who pretended they loved you. And be sorry, be regretful
wow.
that love faded away. And he loves this idea of the mountains and the stars, and he's always talking about the different times of day, etc. When you are old and grey and full of sleep and nodding by the fire, Take down this book and slowly read and dream of the soft look your eyes had once and of their shadows deep. How many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with love false or true? But one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the sorrows of your changing face. And bending down beside the glowing bars, murmur a little sadly how love fled and paced upon the mountains overhead and hid his face amid a crowd of stars.
Oh, Loretta, that's just so beautiful. And what there's a beautiful song. I just would like to introduce the song. It's called Tread Softly. And Loretta, you'd know a little bit more about the poem that it's about, Tread Softly.
Yes.
Yeah. The song itself was recorded by Grother, and Nicola Joyce is singing. And it's just so beautiful. So tell us a bit about...
Well, that was based on He Wishes for the Cloths of Heaven. And it's a very short poem, but very, very beautiful.
Yeah.
And he tells his loved one that had he an embroidered cloth that had the threads of the golden light of the sun, the silver light of the moon, the blue light of midday, so to speak, the grey light of dusk, thread of dusk, and the dark of night. And that would be so unique, but he would think so little of it. He would, like the courtiers of old, like Sir Walter Raleigh, laid his cloak in front of Queen Elizabeth, or like all the age of chivalry, he would lay it at her feet. He would think so little of something so priceless. And he would then, but he says, I haven't got that. I'm poor. I've only my dreams. Tread softly, lest you tread in my dreams. Had I the heaven's embroidered cloths enwrought with golden and silver light, the blue and the dim and the dark cloths of night, of light and the half light, I would spread those cloths under your feet. But I, being poor, have only my dreams. I spread my dreams under your feet. Tread softly, lest you tread on my dreams.
Oh, beautiful. Now let's listen to the song.
Gently,
welcome back. You have been listening to Gratha singing Tread Softly, and you're listening to Capital Irish on 106.1 FM, coming to you every Sunday morning at midday. And we have a lovely team of presenters who take a different show and tell you all about what's happening, Irish things that are happening in New Zealand, and maybe what's on the papers in Ireland. But today we're pre-recording the show, which will go out in August. And I'm Alice Paul, and I have Loretta Egan in the studio with me. And she is something of an expert on Yeats. She has been teaching it all her life, and she has a great understanding of his poetry. And Loretta, we were just saying before, he was really interested in the Celtic revival, Yeats.
Yes.
So...
Yes, he was, and it's very obvious in the Song of Wandering Aengus and the Stolen Child, which I will recite now. Aengus, according to Celtic myth, was the god of love, and he's the speaker in this poem, and he talks about going out to hazel wood, and the hazel tree was the tree of knowledge, and then he makes a fishing rod, a wand, a fishing rod from the hazel tree, and catches a trout, and the trout had properties too, that it could change form and turns into a glimmering girl. So it's a lovely little story, and of course, again, it is love. It's about his love for Maud Gonne, that he spends his time trying to find this glimmering girl and looking for her uphill and down dale. Now he's old, he still hasn't found love.
I'll have to go home and Google Maud Gonne and see what she looked like.
he said, if he finds, they will pluck the silver apples of the moon and the golden apples of the sun, which again, according to mythology, was that they would be immortal.
Okay.
I went out to a hazel wood because a fire was in my head, and cut and peeled a hazel wand, and hooked a berry to a thread. And when white moths were on the wing and moth-like stars came flickering out, I dropped the berry in a stream and caught a little silver trout. When I had laid it on the floor, I went to blow the fire aflame, but something rustled on the floor and someone called me by my name. It called me by my name and ran and faded through the brightening air. Though I am old with wandering through hollow land and hilly land, I will find out where she has gone, and kiss her lips and take her hand, and walk among long dappled grass, and pluck till time and times are done the silver apples of the moon, the golden apples of the sun.
That's so
and another beautiful one, too, like, you know, the way he was very interested in pukas and fairies and all of that, The Stolen Child. And this title arrests us, really, because a child is meant to be at home in the bosom of its family and not stolen. So it's kind of a scary title to begin with, even. And the fairies are the speaker in this poem, and they paint a picture for the child, the human child, of beautiful places in the west of Ireland, like Sleuthwood in the lake, and Ross's Point, and the waterfall at Glen Carr. And they tell the child, you can be all night out playing and just dancing around and not at home. And then they tempt him and entice him to go to the fairy world. And he's hypnotized by the end of it, and he goes. But they're not good fairies. They're not like the tooth fairy. They're menacing little demons.
Right.
And they don't tell him that when he leaves the fairy, the real world, the mortal world, which is full of tears, that he will miss all of the normal things, like being at home and the kettle boiling, the calves and the warm hillside. where dips the rocky highland of Sleuth within the lake, there lies a leafy island where flapping herons wake the drowsy water rats. There we fill our fairy vats full of berries and of reddest stolen cherries. Come away, you human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, from the world more full of weeping than you can understand. Where the wave of moonlight glosses the dim grey sands with light, far off by furthest rosses, we foot it all the night, weaving olden dances, mingling hands and mingling glances, till the moon has taken flight. To and fro we leap and chase the frothy bubbles, while the world is full of troubles and is anxious in its sleep. Come away, O human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, from a world more full of weeping than you can understand. Away with us he's going, the solemn-eyed. He'll hear no more the lowing of the calves on the warm hillside, nor the kettle on the hob sing peace unto his breast, nor see the brown mice bob round and round the oatmeal chest. For he comes, the human child, to the waters and the wild, with a fairy hand in hand, from a world more full of weeping than he can understand.
Wow.
Scary.
It is scary, isn't it? Loretta, that is just so beautiful. But I know that you're going to, unfortunately, we're going to have to finish on one. Because Marion, our lovely technician, Marion Greenless, we're very grateful for Marion today, keeping an eye on everything. But there's no accounting for how many amazing poems that you could introduce us to. This is just a sample, and it's so beautiful. But this last one that you're...
The last one I'd like to recite is a ballad, because he was very in touch with the ordinary people, and the Celtic revival, the ballad being handed down from father to son orally, so to speak. And this is the only poem where there's any kind of mention of religion in Yeats's poetry, seemingly, and it's called The Ballad of Father Gilligan. And there was an epidemic of flu in the region. Thousands died at that time in Ireland of the flu. And Peter Gilligan is duty bound to go out and administer the last sacraments to his flock, to anoint them and with holy oils. But the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He's exhausted and he cannot go. He relinquishes his duty, so to speak. And he wakes in the morning and he realizes he hasn't gone, and he rushes there, and there's a surprise ending. And we know the ballad is a narrative poem, very dramatic with dialogue. The old priest Peter Gilligan was weary night and day, for half his flock were in their beds or under green sods lay. Once, while he nodded on a chair at the moth hour of eve, another poor man sent for him, and he began to grieve. I have no rest, nor joy, nor peace, for people die and die. And after cried he, God forgive, my body spake not I. He knelt, and leaning on a chair, he prayed and fell asleep. And the moth hour went from the fields, and stars began to peep. They slowly into millions grew, and the leaves shook in the wind, and God covered the world with shade and whispered to mankind. And at the hour of sparrow chirp, when the moths came once more, the old priest Peter Gilligan stood upright on the floor. Mavron, Mavron, the man has died while I slept on a chair. He roused his horse out of its sleep and rode with little care. He rode now as he never rode by rocky lane and fen. The sick man's wife opened the door. Father, you've come again.
And is the poor man dead?
He cried. He died an hour ago.
The old priest Peter Gilligan in grief swayed to and fro.
When you were gone, he turned and died as merry as a bird.
The old priest Peter Gilligan, he knelt him at that word.
He who hath made the night of stars for souls who tire and bleed sent one of his great angels down to help me in my need. He who is wrapped in purple robes with planets in his care had pity on the least of things, asleep upon a chair.
Wow. Wow. We'll finish on that. That always makes me want to cry. I had to hold myself there. That was really beautiful, Loretta. Thank you so much for bringing Yeats alive in our studio this evening. It's just beautiful. Right. And thanks to Marion and... we'll see you again in Capital Irish another time.
On the cone of day, big Meresh.
Ah, good milli milli my good. And Slorna Gaspenix.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.